What is up, my metal maniacs? This is the Judas Priest cast.
And you've got another episode coming.
Fuck yeah. And yeah. I'm really excited about this one because we've invited a good friend of mine onto the show to tackle a song that we've been wanting to talk about for quite a while. We've been bantering about which episode and which song we're going to do together. And this one, we've been saying, oh, let's do this one. And then we recorded a different song instead and left this one on the back burner until now. This is a forgotten epic called Run of the Mill from Side B of Judas Priest's 1974 debut, Rockarola. And please welcome this episode's guest, the host of the Feckin' Metal podcast, Fergal Trainer.
Hi, George and Hattie. Nice to be here. And it's nice to finally get around to doing this. As I was saying to you earlier before we started recording, I had several pages of notes written about this for a time long ago when we were originally going to do this, which unfortunately didn't happen. But I seem to have held on to every single notebook I've ever had except that one. I couldn't find it. So I'm just going to be going from memory from scratch, and hopefully it'll be as good as what was in those notes.
Yeah. And listen,
possibly better.
It could be. It could be, Hattie. And I think it's all going to just come flooding back into your brain once we start listening to this song. But hey, before we get down to that, man, how's everything? Tell us a little bit about what's going on with the Feckin' Metal podcast lately.
Sure. Yeah. I had quite a fallow period last year. I wasn't releasing episodes very frequently. It was almost down to one a month. And as I was saying to you kind of in private chats, I lost a bit of the mojo. I lost my motivation to do it. And I started speaking to a few people last year about that, and various other podcasters and friends and things, and got a lot of encouragement from people. And then I just completely did a 180 and was like, right, fuck this. I'm releasing episodes every week again. And I started arranging interviews with people, and my calendar got quite busy. And it just kind of I think I was chatting to you recently when, like, lack of motivation impedes future motivation. Or, like, sorry, no, it wasn't that. It was something like that. I can't remember.
We were present unmotivation fuels future unmotivation.
Something like that, anyway. But I found when I started putting in calls with different people every week, and, you know, people who'd agreed to do podcasts, like John Bonham on a recent one. I have a guy coming up next week. He promotes gigs in Ireland. Things like that, people who I'd agreed in principle to do an interview with, I was like, right, I'm going to go back to these people and actually schedule it. So it's going really well at the moment. I actually did an interview with Ollie, the organizer of Keep It True as well, a week ago, and that's going to be coming out in a couple of weeks as well. So that was a good one.
Wow, that's awesome, Fergal. Wow. Yeah, looking forward to that. I listened to the John Bonham one a few days ago. I liked it. And I think I really enjoy the aspects of your show where you specifically build up and promote elements of the Irish metal and rock scene, which is stuff that I just don't really know and hear about otherwise. And I find it fascinating to learn what the metal scene is like in all different parts of the world. So from you, I'm getting that sort of unique perspective into what's going on in Ireland.
Yeah, it's good. And I don't focus on it enough, actually. Because mainly the scene in Ireland isn't something that I'm particularly interested in. It's a lot of extreme metal, a lot of death metal, black metal, that type of stuff that I don't really go to those gigs. But the odd time you get some good traditional metal bands, and bands like John is in, like Old Season and Celtic Legacy, and you get some other gigs sporadically of stuff that I'd be interested in. So if my interview next week goes ahead, I'll be speaking to kind of one of the main promoters of metal gigs in Dublin. So it'll be interesting to hear his story. And also I want to ask him why the scene is so filled with extreme metal. Is there no market for traditional metal? It seems to me like there's a lot of it out there, but I don't see a lot of gigs representing it in Ireland anyway.
I wonder if it's just the taste of the local communities coming into play. And I'll tell you that in New York, it's kind of the same way, where black metal and death metal and even doom metal is starting to become a big part of it. But the trad metal, it doesn't quite have the same level of following here. I mean, Haunt, to give you an idea, Haunt toured here and they've got a pretty big online fan base, but how many people actually came out to the show? Maybe about 30 at most. So,
I know.
Yeah. So, well, I don't know if New York, they say it's a very metal city, but maybe not the traditional style metal.
Yeah.
Well, there is a reason to that. I feel like even though I barely get to attend any concert because I live in like somewhere under the rock, but I think it has a lot to do with the generations that can actually go to the arena and can afford the energy, if not the time and money. The energy they can afford because they're young and all, and they are more into like death metal, black metal, extreme metal scenes, predominantly because these bands have maintained more a connection or like this engagements with the fan bases and the modes they use, like social media, digital marketing tools, all of these things help the people who organize the concerts to like promote those shows and all that. That's why they are coming forward instead of the trad metal, because they are still in their pen and paper era, I guess, like to a certain extent.
Yeah, and even the younger and newer trad metal bands, some of them are using social media really effectively, mm-hmm. but maybe there's still a little bit of room for growth there.
Yeah, there always is.
Yeah, it's unfortunate just for me because I see all of these traditional metal bands coming out and they're often doing European tours, but there's no date in Ireland. And often even there'll be dates in England. I'm like, how different is it from Ireland to England that they can play gigs in England, but they can't play any over here? But there must be a lack of demand for it, which is unfortunate, but that's the way it is.
But you've gotten a few good ones near you. Like last year you had Unto Others and you had Seven Sisters.
Seven Sisters didn't actually play here. I saw them in Canada. They haven't played here since 2018, even though they've toured the UK and like many times. But Unto Others, yeah, but that was kind of like, I think the only reason that happened was because they were doing an enormous UK tour. So they did like something like 20 dates in the UK. And they obviously when you're doing that, you can fit one in Dublin. But if you're doing one or two dates in the UK, it seems like not too many bands are making the trip. Eternal Champion did play here last year. And it was well attended for the venue that it was, which was small. But at the time, everyone was like, why can't we have more of this? You know, we need more bands like this. But there doesn't seem to be any getting booked. Maybe it'll change. I think some people hoped having the likes of Eternal Champion over in Dublin was possibly going to be a bit of a turning point where it's evident that there is a market for that and people attended it. And it was a weeknight and people still went and it was packed. So hopefully, maybe it'll put wheels in motion for there to be more of that type of thing in the future.
Yay, right. Part of that.
Yeah, like you said, great question for the promoter who you're possibly having on your show very soon. Now,
hopefully, by the time this is released, hopefully that'll be
out
in the list of episodes.
Right. And last time I was talking to Jarvis, or maybe it wasn't when I was talking to him, but a conversation I heard between Jarvis and maybe it was another podcaster and Jarvis Leatherby from Night Demon, for those who don't know, we're all fans here. Anyway, he said that sometimes he'll go do a show in a town with a pretty small scene and not many people show up and it won't be too well attended. But if they tour again in the future and they come back to the same small town or city, the show is always more well attended the second time, and there's also a bigger scene with more bands. That's what he's claimed. So sometimes you have to go and play the crap gigs to get something going and start a scene where there was none.
Absolutely. I think that was on Metal Chat with Melissa. He was saying that. He spoke to her recently, and I remember listening as well. But yeah, I mean, their model is have a small following all over the world, everywhere. And I mean, it obviously works for them. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if all bands are able to do that really though.
That's right. True. Like it's right. A huge not investment.
Everyone, not just anyone can take the hit by going out and doing a few crap gigs to try and build something, to try to plant the seeds of a bigger following later.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But those guys, they also live for metal, you know, they were totally okay with sleeping on couches for a couple years.
Oh, I know, but sure, they've got their fingers in so many pies. Like, everybody knows Jarvis has a load of things going on. He plays and manages in Cirith Ungol. And then the other guys, like, fill in for Cirith Ungol and do their, like...
And Armand
like,
produces.
Road, Yeah, and they're roadies for them and stuff like that as well. And, you know, so they were all heavily, heavily involved. It's definitely their whole lives.
Right. Now, when bands actually do come through to your area that you want to see, are there any particularly good venues where they'll stop? Like, where will they typically play that you'll go see them?
So a mid-sized band, let's say like a Wasp or a Saxon or something like that, they play in a place called the Academy, which is a great venue. It holds about 800 people. And it's a club, basically. And it actually is kind of a nightclub on nights when it's not showing gigs. But that's always a great place to see a kind of mid-sized metal band, you know. Then the Three Arena is the big one. That's where Iron Maiden will be playing in Dublin. That holds about 13 to 15,000, I think. That's an indoor arena. Then there's other theatres like the Olympia, which has been there for a long time. Metal bands don't play there too often, but they do sometimes. And Saxon is actually playing there in March, which would be interesting because I've only ever seen Saxon in the Academy. And the Olympia holds considerably larger number of people, maybe 1,500. So it'll be interesting to see if they sell that out. And then there's a place called Vicar Street as well, which is holds maybe 1,500. I'm not sure. I've seen Sabaton there, would accept. I've seen other metal bands there in the past. At Wasp, actually, this year was supposed to be playing in the Academy, I think, or Vicar Street, sorry, but that was changed to the National Stadium, which holds about 2,200. So it'll be very interesting to see how many they get there. I don't think it's going to be a sellout, but Testament played there a while ago. I think it was well attended. So there are some.
I would never think that Testament could play the same venue as Wasp, because Wasp seems bigger, but I guess in the year 2023, maybe not.
It's an odd one, yeah. It's some of the other venues I mentioned are probably booked up. I don't think the National Stadium would be the first choice for bands like that, because you're not going to sell it out, and it's probably going to cost, I don't know how much it costs to rent, but I'd imagine it's pretty hefty because it's large, and they have to staff it and everything like that. But yeah, it'll be interesting. I went to a gig. Yeah, I went to Ailstorm in the National Stadium, and it was actually packed as well. So it'll be interesting to see how many people Wasp get. I hope it's huge, because I think there's a lot of love for Wasp in Ireland. It's just one of those bands that keeps coming back. And yeah, it'll be great to see them in a couple of months.
Past year or two, I've seen a lot of love for Wasp online. They're coming back into something of an upswing, especially since they're finally playing Fuck Like a Beast again, which everyone has been asking them to for years.
Yeah, just give the fans what they want and then they'll show up. That seems to have been the case at the US tour anyway. Yeah, it seems to have been a massive success. And they had such bad luck, and they had, I don't know if they had bad attitudes as well, but there were so many cancellations, tour cancellations, whatever, over the last decade or so. So it's good to see something going off without any problems, really. I know there was the thing in Texas where it was overbooked, but that seems to have been just an isolated incident. So it's great to see a successful tour for a band like Wasp, where there's only really been negative stories for a long time in the press.
Right, like Guns N' Roses.
A similar type of turnaround on a different scale, of course. But
largely different scale.
But you don't hear anything bad about Axl Rose anymore, haven't for years now. No. And like Blackie Lawless was similar. You know, he'd always be getting into kind of spats with various different people, promoters, I don't know, venues, etc. There seemed to be a lot of tantrums involved as well. Maybe at the ripe old age of 65 now, he's decided, fuck it, I've only got a couple of more years doing this. Might as well just get what I can out of it.
I think that's a good move on their part. Okay, folks, who wants to talk some Judas Priest?
Hell yeah, that's what I've been waiting for.
That's what we're here for, isn't it? All right, yep. Well, when you gave me a list of songs that you might want to talk about, Fergal, I picked out one of them right away, and it made me go, this one? Weird. Because Run of the Mill, that's a song that I never thought of at all. And when I see a song like that, that someone else wants to talk about, my brain instantly goes to, great, someone else is going to do my homework for me and tell me why this song is so great. But I have re-listened to the song, like, of course, several times since. And you know what? I'm really seeing a lot of good stuff in it. And I'm getting why it's something that you might enjoy having a deep discussion on. So I'm with you now, and I'm really looking forward to this one.
And I'm super stoked. I love this song.
it's just something that always stood out to me on the debut album. The debut album, I don't think, is particularly good. It has a couple of good songs on it. And it's one of those things that it didn't hit me until years later, actually. So I can't say it always stood out. But when it hit me, I realized what a gem it was on that album. Because there's a lot of kind of wishy-washy stuff on that, in my opinion. And now, like, when that song finally hit me, I don't know, probably several years after first having the album, I just realized that it was such a diamond in the rough of that, like, the selection of songs.
It is, though. Even Rob Halford has said kind of the same exact story. Like, there's great stuff on Rockarola if you go back and really dig into it, and Run of the Mill, it's one of the highlights. It's one of the ones he's talked about and said that he's really liked.
Mm.
So if your opinion is in line with Rob Halford, you're probably not that far off. That's a good line of thinking to be in.
Well, Rob.
And Hattie, I know you love this song too.
Oh boy, do I. Well, unlike you, I kind of hit it off. Like, this was when I listened to it first time, I felt like, yeah, it's amazing. And that's really funny because I was a teenager, like even younger than when KK and Rob wrote this song. But I was in a very angsty episode of my life. I was feeling like, yeah, what have I done in my life as a like 17 years old child or teenager, whatever you would say. And it seems funny that I was thinking along that line. But I could, like, in a way, relate myself to this whole song. And that's very funny, like, now that I think about it. But as a song, I think it is a very potent and very packed song with a lot inside it. Even though the lyrics are not very big, but the whole combination, it's amazing. Like, yeah, let's talk about it. We'll know.
Yeah, you raised a great point. It's one of those songs that feels like it's written by someone well beyond the years of the actual 20-something-year-olds. Like, there's a perspective in the lyrics that's very self-reflective and looks like it's written in hindsight by someone who's, well, someone who's the age that Rob Halford is right now.
Yeah.
But he wrote this. How did he pull this out when he was like 25? Fergal, what were you saying?
I was going to say, I have a theory about the perspective in the lyrics. I don't know if this is the correct time to share that, or maybe later on we'll delve into the lyrics.
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah, I think tell so. You what, why don't we get started with the listen?
Okay. Yes, please.
I love that opening guitar.
Almost reminds me of something like Dave Murray reply.
Yeah, it's reflective. You can already tell that the song is going to be reflective. And you can hear it in the notes.
Yeah. It gives me goosebumps.
Bass riff coming in.
Here it goes.
Halford's clean vocal back then was so strong.
He really was good from the beginning.
So typical Judas Priest sound there kicking in at that point, I think.
Yep.
I would say so. Yeah, see, that's a riff right there. And we're just hitting the 2 minute mark. Now, I would say that the song has quite a long build. And listeners, if you're not familiar with this song, grab a drink, buckle in, because this beast is not a short one. This is an 8+ minute song. In fact, this was the longest Judas Priest song for a couple decades until they wrote Cathedral Spires and Loch Ness later in their careers. So this was the longest song.
Way later.
Yeah. This is the longest song that they've done for a long time. I don't know why they stopped writing songs that long, to be honest. Maybe they just thought it wasn't where they wanted to go. But back in this time, they were really into the proggy, progressive rock thing. And there were no rules. There was no outline. They were just kind of doing what they wanted. I see a lot of similarities to the first Black Sabbath album, where they would combine like several mini songs together to make one 10-minute track, like Wasp, / Behind the Wall of Sleep, / Basically, / Warning, / whatever.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that. They're not really known for their epics, actually, which is an interesting point. So you said Loch Ness and Cathedral Spires. They're the only two songs that are longer than this.
That would be correct.
Wow, that's unbelievable. In a career that's nearly 50 years, that an 8-minute long song is your third longest song. Very interesting.
Right. Now compare that to, I don't know, let's say Iron Maiden. And I think half their discography since the year 2000 is over 8 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. Eight minutes is a snappy Iron Maiden song these days.
Right. Writing on the Wall is almost 8 minutes, and that was the fucking single. Oh, man. So, yeah, lengthy song and takes a little bit to build. It's pretty slow at the start, but that intro melody is beautiful. I don't know. Why did I ignore this song for so long? I guess when you're in the middle of Rockerola, maybe you've already kind of checked out because you feel like, oh, this album is not the best. And this becomes a sort of hidden gem that I kind of maybe ignored it because I was already losing interest by this point in the album.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say there were times when I'd stopped listening to the album by this point. I just kind of got bored. And then I'd say as well, we haven't got to it yet, but there is a large instrumental middle section as well, which could prohibit you from listening to the last part of the song. So it doesn't have much going in its favor. It's on a kind of a patchy album. It in itself has an odd structure and it takes patience and time to get to know it. And sometimes I suppose you don't give the correct amount of patience and time, the adequate amount that the song needs in order to be enjoyed.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. Because, you know, this song, it is not lyrically very, like, rich as I have still, by rich, I mean, like, very spread out. But it takes time for the song to build, like, to depict a story. Like, it has a lot of non-lyricy parts, like, where the rhythm is building up, the emotions are building up, the tone of the narration is building up. Like, that's why it kind of takes time. And, you know, if you are coming out of like the song Never Satisfied, you might want something to speed you even further up. And here you are seeing this and, I mean, listening to this. And that kind of, you know, might throw some people off and might not throw some other people off. But I think, yeah, that might be a reason.
Yeah, good point. It's not really a very hard rocking album when you think about it. Because maybe the first two songs are, but then you get like that whole winter deep freeze thing. Yeah. We're not going to talk about that one. And then you've got Never Satisfied, which brings up the tempo again. And then you've got this, and you're bringing it back down. And after this,
and then you've got Dying to meet you.
Caviar and Meth. Those are soft. Like, it's interesting for a heavy metal band. There's surprisingly a low percentage of heavy content here, or I should say heavy instrumentally, because lyrically, like you were referring to, Hattie, there is some very deep content there, but it's also not verbose. Like in an 8-minute song, no chorus, just three verses of four lines each. They have to pack a lot into very few words.
And they did. And another thing I think, like I wanted to say before when we were discussing earlier, that before Rockerola, there were no Judas Priest. So they became Judas Priest after that. So that way, like, we can't really expect them to be like the heavy, the speedy Judas Priest we know them for. Like, I think, and as we know by now, like when Al Atkins was there and he had to leave and all that, that they had to make a lot of compromises with songs, with length, with formation, everything. So I think that kind of plays a rather significant role in like this album not being what we want heavy metal and a good heavy metal album to be now. Because back then, as I always say, the people in suits decided what to do with all of this, and they kind of failed that this would be their right way for a new band, new quote-unquote rock band, to like get a first album out and all that. So that way we can't really, you know, expect a lot from this, but we're fans. We are not supposed to know all of that when we are enjoying music. So there's that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, context is everything. And in 1974, there was no metal. They called it, what, heavy rock? In magazines and stuff. And the only contemporaries for Priest were Black Sabbath, Deep Purple, Uriah Heep. And at the time, those were all bands that were very much engaging in the long, noodly progressive songs. And Judas Priest, they were kind of in the same sphere as what those other early proto heavy metal bands were doing. So in context, Rockerola is not as much of a weird album when you compare to what was out at the time. But in the hindsight of knowing the rest of Judas Priest's career, then I would say Rockerola is definitely a weird relic.
Yeah. And I think another thing, like as we are millennials, we don't start listening to Judas Priest from Rockerola. We start definitely at least not. Either from Painkiller or from Stained Glass or Screaming for Vengeance, sure, or yep. all these albums. So yeah, that kind of defies the expectations we have from Judas Priest. So makes sense.
I actually did start listening to them from Rockerola, funnily enough. It was a friend of mine who burnt me a CDR of Rockerola because I was getting into Iron Maiden, and he's like, if you like Iron Maiden, you love Judas Priest. But then he gave me this album. I don't know why, he must have hated me or something. After this, I was like, I liked a couple of songs on it, and I bought a best of after that. But yeah, it was my first Judas Priest album officially, even though it was a burnt CD.
Wow, that's rare.
Weird place to start, yeah. Mm. Very cool, though. Another piece of the Fergal story where the puzzle pieces all fit together, just like, oh, so this is Fergal.
Okay. Me.
Who wants to hear more of the song?
Me.
Let's go.
Okay, so we've just listened to the second batch of 2 minutes. We're about halfway through the song now, and I think this would be a great time to take a look at the lyrics. I'm seeing two distinct characters because there's a lot of uses of both the pronoun I and the pronoun you. So there are definitely two characters. There's an I and a you. So let's start at the top. What have you achieved now that you're old? So one of the two characters, the so-called you, obviously is an old person, and someone is asking him, like posing these questions to him. So I'm thinking maybe an old person talking to a young person would make the most sense. And yeah, it could be his kid, it could be his grandkid, or just really anyone. We don't know yet. But the point that is being made is that there is someone who's elderly and now reflecting on his life. Did you fulfill ambition? Do as you were told? And to me, fulfilling ambition and doing as you're told, I don't know if those things, they go together or they sort of clash together, because your ambition may or may not be what you were told to do. Your ambition might have been something separate. But then the question sort of gets turned on its head again when the third line says, are you still doing the same this year? To me, now it's being asked, well, did you get complacent? Are you just spinning your wheels and resting on your laurels? And are you done working hard and fulfilling what you've wanted to do in your life? And then with this fourth line, should I give sorrow or turn around and sneer? The younger person who's posing these questions to the elderly person, that younger person is saying, I don't know whether I should pity you or sort of look down my nose at you.
I think that Rob Halford is talking to his worst nightmare future self. So I don't think it's a real person. I think it's a theoretical person. And this is
an internal conversation.
Exactly. And so I think this is his worst fear, or this is the sum of his worst fears. Somebody who's achieved nothing, did as they were told, doing the same thing, a figure of pity. And this is what he doesn't want to happen. So he's the I, and the worst nightmare future self is the you. And it's basically his worst nightmare manifesting itself in this conversation. And like, I think he desperately wants to break out of the working class in the Black Country, Birmingham. Even the title of the song, Run of the Mill, has a double meaning, of course. Run of the Mill means ordinary, but obviously there were plenty of steel mills in the area at the time. So it's somebody who just grew up in the working class, never broke free, and he desperately, as we know, wants to do that at this point, and wanted to do that from a young age when he was in theater productions and everything. And I think this is him going, but what the fuck, like, what if it goes wrong? What if it goes badly? What if I don't ever do anything? This will be the outcome. And like, you can tell that he desperately doesn't want that to happen.
Yeah.
It makes so much sense. It makes so much sense, especially if you know the Judas Priest and the Rob Halford story, and you think about where they were. Judas Priest, they were all sleeping in their van in the freezing cold around the time their first two albums were being made, gigging in pubs where only a handful of people would show up. And Rob might have had the very real fear that you're describing. What if we don't make it? What if I have to work retail for the rest of my life, or work in a factory for the rest of my life?
What I think is interesting in the third verse, I know we haven't listened to it yet, is he says, now with the aid of your new walking stick, which is funny because modern day Rob Halford has a walking stick. But he's achieved his dreams. He's not run of the mill. He's not doing the same thing, as in the ordinary thing. But he happens to have a walking stick. So it's a bit of both happening there.
The self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yes, that's what I was like thinking about. Like, we got to see them in full cycle of this song, from the youngsters of 70s to this old, cool old people in the 2020s.
Right. Cool old people? Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. I mean, Halford seems like he's still pretty with it. He's active on Instagram as much as a teenager and still posting memes and nudes like the rest of us. So he's still...
And cats. It's on Saturdays.
And cats. Oh, man. So, hey, listen, now that they're old, Judas Priest have fulfilled ambition. I guess they're still doing the same this year. They're still making music and touring, but there's a new album on the horizon. So they're not exactly doing the same this year. But anyway, that's for another time down the road. So Hattie, what sort of thoughts did you have on these lyrics coming into the episode? Like, what were your interpretations?
So my interpretation was, it's like as I have mentioned, it seems like it starts from like the, you know, the first guitar part seems like it's outdoorsy, like how the countryside or the windy places are like in those places like Birmingham. And then it cuts into indoors kind of place, like a bar or a pub where people have conversation. Drunk conversations more likely, because that's where you have this kind of hallucinations. And you know why I think about it as a drunk conversation? Because KK Downing and I guess Rob also wrote this song, and Whiskey Woman, which later became Victim of Changes, were both like songs that had some kind of alcoholic influences. So that's how I kind of feel that this song is a self-respect reflecting song and has a lot to do with a little encouragement from the Liquid Courage thingy.
And so a little encouragement from Liquid Courage,
which I have no experience on, but I can guess like this kind of, you know, have it gets your neurons noodly and you think of things, and here a person is thinking of things. And I think, yeah, when you think, when you don't generally think of like the good parts, this kind of brings the deepest, darkest fears of yours, and this is a depiction of that, like how bad things can go. And that's what this person is reflecting on, that how bad I can possibly fail or how I have failed. Like when I first listened to it, I kind of thought it was an old man reflecting and talking back and forth to his younger self, like just the opposite of what Fergal said. But yeah, it's too. But that's how it is. Like it, one way or another, it's a reflection. Maybe it's about your future or about your past. But yeah, I guess this song indeed is about like reflecting on your life or on the future. So there it is for me.
And that's exactly what I was alluding to. In 8 minutes of song, all you get is three verses of 4 lines each, 12 lines, and then a repeating line at the end, I can't go on. And that's it. But they've packed a lot of meaning into just a few words, and I love it. I like what you said, Hattie, about the drunken conversation. And I could even picture that being sort of a literal conversation in a bar if it's not an internal monologue, you know, just two people brought together by circumstance, having a couple drinks together and sitting together and getting to talk. And maybe it's a younger person talking to an old guy. So what's your story, man? What have you done? And if it is two literal characters, then I picture the younger guy just sort of getting to know someone who's a little older and saying, this is not who I want to be. This is not the fate that I want for myself, just to grow up to be ordinary and uninteresting and wasting away my days downing drinks at a bar.
That kind of ties to what Fergal said earlier, that, you know, Birmingham is a mine city. And back in that time, like mid-70s, Thatcher already has cut the, you know, fundings for the mills and peats. So they were already being unemployed and all that. And that's why young people would turn up to the older ones, like how they survived all these years, and ask for directions, if not for reflection, to like get by. And then kind of other industries have boomed or like fell down. So it kind of has that picture of that era of despair for the young people. So that also ties to this.
Virgil, you had something.
Yeah, I was just going to say the final verse is interesting. When he said, "Now with the aid of your new walking stick, you hobble along through society thick and look mesmerized by the face of it all. You keep to the gutter in case you fall." I think that's an interesting choice of word there. If Rob Halford doesn't achieve his dreams, will his life be in the gutter? Are those the two choices? Fulfill your ambition, do all the things that you wanted to do, or be in the gutter?
I really like that line. Hey, what do you say we listen to a little more of the song? Because I want to hear it now.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I know we haven't even gotten to the verse yet, but we've listened to another 2 minutes, and I just want to stop it to talk about the actual musical elements we're hearing. Something I like about this is that you could hear the bass pretty darn well, and Ian Hill doesn't always get the chance to shine in Judas Priest, but when you have the chance to have him up front in the mix and you can hear what he's doing, then you really hear what a great bassist he is and how he's coming up with these sort of creative lines. Like, he's not the flashiest member of Judas Priest, but he has the chops.
There's a great bass tone on this song. It's just so prominent, and it's so suitable for the song, actually. It really fits, but it's really noticeable.
Yeah, very noticeable here. And it's because it's a soft song. Obviously, there's not all those crunchy, distorted guitars in the mix. The guitars are very light, even though they're doing all those noodly solos and licks. I would say this is a very 70s sounding song because
I was about to say the same.
Yeah, bands were doing this a lot back then, this kind of extended jam with long, drawn out guitar melodies in the middle. But it's good. Mm-hmm. It reflects the time in which it was written and recorded, but it's still enjoyable to listen to today because the guitars, they have a very nice, pleasing sound to them.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that part does go on a bit long, but it is building towards what's to come, which is obviously kind of a big crescendo. But it's pleasant to listen to as well, and it does get a bit faster. It gets progressively more. You know, it's heading in some direction. It's not just aimless noodling.
Yeah, does it go a bit
building
long?
up to a not a very certain meaningful point.
Definitely a good build up. Does it go a little too long? Maybe. I mean, like we said, this is the third longest Judas Priest song.
It's a matter of taste. I think personally goes a little bit too long, but it's a matter of taste.
Sure. Yeah, and for context,
it's on you.
But for context, we've already listened to 6 minutes, and maybe it doesn't feel like that long. Normally, I make the clips a little bit shorter, like 40 seconds to a minute at a time. But if we do it like that, we're never, ever getting through this one. All right. Now let's get back to it. I want to hear that third verse. Man, Rob delivers that last line with some real grit. You keep to the gutter in case you fall.
Yeah. I love the tempo with which he delivers those lines. It's like, in case you fall. It's not like the way you would say it, but the emphasis that he puts on each word is it's perfect.
That classic Halford unconventional delivery. And I've praised him for that before. And one of the things I love about it is you just remember the lyrics, because the way he sings it isn't as you expect, and because it's weird and unconventional, then it sticks in your memory better.
Yeah.
Yes.
I love the melody in that last verse as well. Sorry to interrupt. I love the melody in that last verse as well. It's like, it's just, I know it's kind of the same as the previous one, but his emphasis on the delivery, which is kind of more intense, it really, really kind of sticks in your head, like you were saying, and you go away thinking about that part of the song when you finish listening to it.
You do. Yeah. And I'm still thinking about those words that you brought up. You keep to the gutter in case you fall. The gutter is what you want to avoid. And to me, it's very clearly saying that you're going to sort of stay in a comfortable situation that doesn't require you to try hard or reach far. Because if you fall, well, then you're already at the bottom. You have nowhere to go. The landing is not as hard.
Yeah. I know you read his first book, Confess, and I do remember taking some notes about the book when I was first listening to the song a while back when we were talking about doing it initially. But I was wondering, do you know he talks about the pub he used to go to? I think it was the Dog and Duck or something like that. I don't know.
Sounds like a very British name, the Dog and Duck.
It mightn't have been the Dog and Duck, but it was something to that extent or to that effect. But I was wondering, is he also speaking to the people down in the Dog and Duck? Do you know when he mentions, like, when he's gone on his first US tour with Judas Priest and he's like, he comes back and they're like, hey up, Rob. We're America. And he's like, oh, it was great. We're on tour, blah, 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 blah. He's like, oh, that's very nice. I've just had my car in for a service. And it's like, they don't give a shit about his life, really. And it's like, is he speaking to those people as well in this? The people who, they were drinking in the pub before he went on tour to America. They're there after he comes back. Their lives are, to him, probably mundane. And is he kind of speaking to those people? I wondered as well.
I never thought of that. That is a real possibility, I would say. But granted, this song was obviously written before Priest ever got to tour internationally or overseas to the U.S. So maybe there was foresight in there. Maybe he just sort of looked at those other people and knew, okay.
Yeah, I think that's his mindset, though. Right? Yeah, like,
these are the people who aren't going anywhere. These are the people who are going to live and die in their hometown. And that they were born and raised in. Not that that's a bad thing, but clearly when you read these lyrics, that's not the life he wanted for himself.
Absolutely. Yeah. And he'd been going to that pub for years. So like, it's just kind of, this is how his mind was working. I think anyway, his mind was working. It's like, this isn't for me. I want to do something more than this. I want to do something which has more potential than what these people have in their lives, what the potential that they have available to them.
And those were dying towns back then, like in 70s.
They were what, sorry?
Dying, like the, as I have said, like the mills were closed and everything shutting down. So yeah, there were barely a little, any prospects then.
You also mentioned Halford's book, and there's a quote about this very song that I liked from him. And he says, "An old man looking back on having lived a mediocre life, I was pretty hard on the poor old guy, really. What have you achieved now you're old? Did you fulfill ambition, do as you were told? Where did those words come from, written by a 22-year-old? I think I was probably scared of doing the same thing and letting life pass me by, as I saw so many people doing every day." So, Virgil, I think a lot of your theories on these lyrics, they're validated by what Rob wrote in Confess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I have read the book, so that's obviously in my subconscious as well. So it's not an original theory by any means. But yes, I mean, I think anyone looking at those lyrics really would come to a similar conclusion. The mundane life, the daily grind, that's not for Rob Halford. He wants something more than that.
Yeah, and this album essentially meant like these things, like Caviar and Meth. The actual song was something along the line that Al Atkins later performed like on his own in his album. I guess that was also named Sin After, Diamonds and Rust or whatever. I forgot the name. But yeah, they also like had things to do with similar things, like how to survive in this hotshot gang town or whatever it was said. So yeah, like those times were hard for them, and everything was about survival or like living a better life.
Mm. Yeah, Rockarola seems like a disjointed album, and maybe it is musically, but thematically and lyrically, a lot of it comes together to espouse the same sort of stuff that the band was going through behind the scenes, the whole sort of hard life of growing up in the English working class and trying to break out and come into your own and do something with your life. You raise a good, interesting point, and I love that you find these sort of connections, Hattie.
Mm-hmm. Love Caviar and Meth so much.
Yeah, that'll be a good one. Okay, we are 7.5 minutes nearly into this song. Let's send it home.
Let's do it.
And that is Run of the Mill, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, well, I know a lot of our listeners probably won't be familiar with that song because Rockarola is not one of the most popular Judas Priest albums. So if you're hearing it for the first time now, we would love for you to get on Twitter and tell us what you think of it. But I guess we're going to start the conversation here and wrap up with our thoughts on the song as a whole. Guys, this is a really good song. It's very different from a lot of other stuff you'd hear from Judas Priest, but it, at the same time, you got to respect how a group of kids in their early 20s could come up with this 8-minute epic that is so self-reflective. And I think, although maybe it's a little rough in some places, maybe a little bit too long, what they accomplished, I think, is overall pretty cool.
I fully agree. I think it has many parts that make it special, like the gentle guitar opening, very reflective tone, like I said earlier. I can't really think of any other Judas Priest songs that sound quite like that. When the heavy, kind of more typical Priest riff comes in later on, it starts kind of putting some structure to the song. I think the lyrics are quite powerful, and they are relatable, I'd say, to a lot of people as well, a lot of people listening. I mean, how many people who listened to heavy metal had a band themselves that never took off, or they played 3 gigs and they stopped, or they gave up and they sold their guitar? It must be quite a lot. Everybody knows many people who are either in a band or are currently in a band, especially in the area of metal. I love when it starts to build up and then those screams at the end. My Christ, that must be one of Rob Halford's best, up there with Dreamer Deceiver/Deceiver. High-pitched vocals he's ever done. But I also love the power in his restrained vocal earlier on in the song. He's not trying too hard, but you can hear it's powerful. It's something he wouldn't be able to do today, I don't think. Even the opening verses, I don't know if he's able to hold his voice in that manner anymore, but it's great to hear back then, like, to remind you of how good he was. And I know he's still great at what he does now in his 70s, but back then he was almost untouchable, I think. I Can't Go On's at the end are, like, it's a shame that they never really had it in their live set, when he probably still could have done it, maybe around the Painkiller era or something like that, because it would have been nice to have heard him doing it. Yeah, but overall, I think it's, as I said earlier, A Diamond in the Rough. It's the standout track on that album to me. It almost doesn't belong there, but it is there.
You possibly could have even taken this and put it on Sad Wings, like, instead of Epitaph.
Yeah, I think so.
Yep.
And Hattie, I would really love to know, like, your overall thoughts on this song. Anything and everything else you want to say about it?
It is, as I said before, it's a reflective song. And, you know, when it comes to, like, the last verse, like, I guess I read it somewhere that they stopped doing it, or, like, decided against doing it in life, because it wasn't easy to, like, do that in life settings for Halford, like, later in life. But now I also agree with Virgil that they could have done it before, like, in the late 70s or late 80s. Then at least we'd have those live albums where this song was played and know what it would be like, because it's amazing, like, hitting all those high notes, or, like, this very low restrained voice. Like, this song is in a way magical, like, at this point of our lives. So yeah, it's interesting, at least.
Patty, what's your personal relationship with this song?
So, like, as I think I have talked about it a little, so I was in a crossroad, like, between choosing majors, switching schools, and I was like, is life over for me? Have I, like, lost all the accomplishments I have done because I'm stalling? And, like, am I never get any better than this? Because I kind of had this very high accomplishment in my 12th grade results and all that, and then I just dropped out of one school. So before, like, getting into another school, I was listening to, like, a lot of Judas Priest and all that, and I was, like, in that reflective era of my life, like, as a 17 year old kid, thinking, like, my life is over, I have, like, failed, and this is how I will be doing all my life. So that's how it was a very weird time for me. So this song made a lot of sense then.
I could see how that would be relatable. I've actually switched colleges and I switched majors as well. So, and the in-between period, I would say, is one of the most uncertain and confusing times that I've ever been through. Just the whole not really being sure of where my life is going to end up, knowing that the one ambition that I used to have is not the right path for me anymore, and that I have to sort of rethink my life plan and come up with something new. And when you're in a sort of scenario like that, run of the mill, it just makes sense because, again, yeah, as we've said so many times, very reflective.
Mm-hmm.
So they played this song live in 1974, according to setlist.fm, but they never brought it back into the set list. And I don't think they ever will. Yeah, I know Priest has been pulling out some rare songs in the past few years, but this is not going to be one of them.
No.
So
he, Rob couldn't get it, unfortunately. I don't know if you remember when on the John episode, he said he was trying to get a Judas Priest tribute band together. He's somebody I know who could pull that off. I just texted him there and said, if you ever do get that Judas Priest band together, you have to do Run of the Mill. So maybe
do it, Virgil.
Maybe we'll get to hear it sometime.
Right. And I don't know the exact quote, but I think Rob said even back in the day, he would have had trouble with this because the high part's extremely high. And he also says that sometimes the really nice sounding Queen vocals can be a lot harder to do than the screaming, at least for him. And again, both parts are going to be a challenge for him in this day and age, because at the beginning, he has a very gorgeous melody going on.
Yeah, I think he would struggle with that, as good as he still is. Long, clean, melodic, kind of somewhat powerful parts seem to be the range that older singers lose when they get into their 60s and 70s.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I've heard Rob himself say that as he ages, that does get more difficult for him. So I think you're on the money there, Virgil.
Yeah, and he's not really like very totally healed. Like he just got out of cancer, I guess. So these things, everything like, you know, adds up.
Right. And you also have to think about, is the average concert goer going to want to hear Run of the Mill, you know, an 8-minute depressive ballad? I think this song is probably going to put the crowd to sleep. When they do play ballads now, like Beyond the Realms of Death, you know, Beyond the Realms of Death has those soft parts, but then every minute and a half, then the heavy chugging guitars kick in for the chorus, the da-dun-dun-dun-dun, and that wakes the crowd up.
But you know what? I think, like, if by some miracle they were able to play this, I think that that should be the last thing on their list about whether or not it's going to put the crowd to sleep. They can do whatever the hell they want now. Like I wouldn't even consider that if I were them. If they were somehow able to do this, just go out and do it. For the people who do appreciate it, it's only 8 minutes of an hour and 45 minute concert. They can suck it up, the people who don't like it. And the people who do want to hear it will absolutely love it. It's not going to make or break their career at this point. They're nearly finished.
At this point, sure, they can do it for themselves if they want. If they were really going to go out and do a show for themselves, I feel like maybe they would just do that whole Nostradamus performance. You know, a lot of the band members have said they always wanted to do that and never got the chance. If they could schedule just one night to do the album in full and play it just once, I have to hope maybe that would be enough for them. I don't think it's going to happen, but if they were really going to go out and do a show just for themselves, I think I would want them to do that one.
I definitely go to it, but I've never really believed any of them when they've said that, because if they really wanted to do it, they could have done it. And why didn't they?
But the average Priest fan wouldn't have wanted it.
But there would be a certain contingent of fan who would go to it. And that's all it's ever going to be. It's only ever going to be a niche thing to a small audience. It's never going to have mass appeal. So that's all it would have been. And that's all it ever would be in the future. But like, if they really wanted to do that, it's, what, 15 years ago now the album was out? They would have done it by now. It's not going to happen, I don't think, personally.
Right. I think they also would not have done it without KK Downing, and he was out of the band like only 2 years after Nostradamus released.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Guys, this has been a great talk. I love talking about Judas Priest, and I am happy that I get to do it with both of you. Fergal.
Yeah, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, Fergal, you are an awesome guest because you always come up with these really salient, interesting points that I never would have thought of. And for any listeners who don't know, Fergal is a good friend of mine. We talk all the time, and you should definitely go listen to the Feck and Metal podcast as well.
Thanks very much, George. It's been great. I like talking about Judas Priest as well, and I don't really do it very often, so it makes it all the more special. I talk about Iron Maiden very often, but Judas Priest, that I love nearly as much, I don't talk about a tenth as much, so it's nice to focus on a different band of the same type of stature and who have the same depth and history and legacy as a band like Iron Maiden. It's nice to be able to speak about Judas Priest for a change.
Yay.
And Hattie, I think this is your first time talking to Fergal, at least in a live setting. So hopefully you guys are going to become good friends, because Fergal is someone who you will hear on our show again.
Looking forward to it.
Great. Looking forward to it as well.
Yay.
Hey, Fergal, anything else that you want to plug or promote while we got you here?
Nah, I'm all right. Thanks, though.
Just Feckin' Metal. Go listen to that, everyone.
Go listen to it if you want to. I'm beyond plugs at this stage. I'm an old crusty podcaster.
You don't have to plug yourself. I already plugged you.
Can I say something here? There's one of my favorite quotes ever. It's from Larry David when he's talking about Seinfeld. And they moved the night of the show on the network a number of times. And I remember one time, just seeing an interview with him, they were moving it from Wednesday to Thursday. And they were trying to convince him, oh, no, the audience is going to be a lot better on Thursday. And he's like, if they weren't watching on Wednesdays, I don't want them watching on Thursdays. So if you're not already listening to Feckin' Metal, well.
if you know about Feckin' Metal and you hate it, then Fergal's not going to pick you up. If you've never heard of Feckin' Metal before, then this is for you. Go check it out.
Something like that.
All right. Well, thanks, everyone. That's all the heavy metal chatter we've got for this episode of Judas Priest Cast. So until next time,
keep defending the faith.